This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. Fibromyalgia is a disorder which some say causes pain, fatigue, sleep, memory, and mood issues. While there is no cure, research is ongoing. Joining me to talk about fibromyalgia is director of the Women's Health Research Program and professor at the University of Cincinnati Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Neuroscience, Dr. Leslie Arnold. If you have a question or a comment, you can call us 513-419-7100 or email us talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So for people that really don't know, tell us what fibromyalgia is.
Fibromyalgia is a very common, chronic, widespread pain disorder. So it's characterized by chronic musculoskeletal pain that affects the entire body. And it's associated with a lot of other symptoms, too. In addition to pain, patients often report fatigue and sleep disturbances as well. We've been studying fibromyalgia at UC for many years, and we're very happy to report that we have made some progress in understanding the mechanisms involved in the development of fibromyalgia, as well as some treatment options for our patients.
Well, let's break it down a little bit. You talk about this widespread pain and all the mood issues and other things that go with it. How did it first become diagnosed? When were people first starting to see these symptoms and attributing it to fibromyalgia?
Well, fibromyalgia has been discussed in the medical literature since the late 19th century. So it's been a condition that's been recognized for many, many years. But it was in 1990 that the American College of Rheumatology established classification criteria for fibromyalgia. And that really stimulated a lot of research because now we had criteria that we could use among all of the researchers. So there was some consistency in identifying patients with this condition. And the research has just exploded since 1990.
How widespread is it?
It occurs in about 2% of the U.S. general population. So approximately 4 to 5 million adults have fibromyalgia in the U.S. It's a condition that's recognized across the world. And it also actually can occur in adolescents as well.
And you find, I think I read that it's more often occurring in women. Is that correct?
That's correct. It's more common in women than men. But men do develop fibromyalgia as well.
And how is it related to arthritis?
Well, that's a good question. It's not the same as arthritis. So even though the pain is experienced in the musculoskeletal system, so patients report pain in their muscles and their joints, the disease state, if you will, actually originates in the central nervous system. So it's a disease of pain processing, how our body processes pain.
And as you've been studying it, what are some of the findings that have come out, say, over this past 20 years, since 1990, 25 years?
Right. So first, we are learning more about the fact that we think it is a genetic disorder. And at the University of Cincinnati, we completed a family study where we found it was highly familial. And so we concluded that there are likely genetic factors involved. And we followed the family study up with a genetic study, and we were able to identify some candidate genes that might be involved, particularly genes that involve a neurotransmitter called serotonin, which is an important transmitter in our pain processing system. So we think it's genetic, but we also think, of course, the environment plays an important role as well, because many patients do report that it starts after a stressor. And it can be a psychological stressor, it could be a physical stressor, even infections can induce this condition. We've also learned more about what are the possible mechanisms involved, you know, how this develops in an individual. And it really appears that there are some changes in levels and function of certain key neurotransmitters involved in pain processing, including serotonin, which I already mentioned, also norepinephrine. So these levels have been found to be lower in patients with fibromyalgia in their cerebral spinal fluid, so in their central nervous system, than in those people who don't have fibromyalgia. So we think there is some dysfunction in the way the pain processing works, the way our nerves process pain.
So they might be feeling pain when there's no reason to feel pain? Is that what you're saying? Or
No. What we're saying is that fibromyalgia, like other chronic pain conditions, is actually a disease state in and of itself. So, you know, I think many people think when they develop pain, there must be a cause that they can identify, you know, maybe some trauma or inflammation. But really what we're saying is chronic pain is of itself a disease state. It's a disease of the central nervous system, the way that the brain and the spinal cord process pain.
Our phone number is 513-419-7100. You can email us, talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. We're talking today about fibromyalgia with Dr. Leslie Arnold. And if you have a question, we'd certainly like to hear from you. You talked about the genetic factors involved. And can it be connected from men to women as well as women to men? Or is it strictly, do you see it genetically between the same sexes within a family?
Well, it is definitely more common in women, and we don't truly understand that yet, why women are more susceptible to developing chronic pain, and not just fibromyalgia, but pain in general. There are many different theories. One is that women may have lower stores of serotonin, that important neurotransmitter, and so they may be more susceptible to having problems with pain processing. There may be problems related to the female hormones that prime women for pain experience, but we still don't really fully understand that. So in family members, we do see it aggregating in the female members of a family. Not to say that it didn't occur in some of our men, it did, but it was much more common in the women. So if you have fibromyalgia, your family members might be up to 8 times more likely to also have fibromyalgia. So it is highly familial. We think that pain sensitivity in general is highly genetic, and there's a lot of effort right now going on to try to identify the genes involved in pain, because I think ultimately knowing that will help us develop better treatments that really are potentially disease-modifying. Right now, we don't really have anything that can stop the process of this.
How do you treat it?
So we treat it with both medications to help manage the symptoms. But we also involve other kinds of treatments, what we call non-pharmacologic approaches. One of the main approaches is exercise. It turns out that aerobic exercise, and it doesn't have to be very intensive, just moderate degree aerobic exercise is very effective in improving overall well-being and patient function. Also, we utilize some therapeutic techniques like cognitive behavioral therapy, and that's a broad term that can include many different types of approaches, such as relaxation, stress management, developing improved ways of coping, learning to live with this condition, which can be challenging.
Jennifer's calling from Cincinnati. Hi, Jennifer. What's your question?
Hi. My husband's been diagnosed with a myofascia pain, which I understand, I guess, is similar to fibromyalgia, and was just curious to see if the speaker was familiar with that, or to see if she knew if some of the same treatments for fibromyalgia might be helpful for the myofascia pain.
Dr. Arnold?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And there are many of us who believe that there's a great deal of overlap between myofascial pain syndrome and fibromyalgia. There's a little bit of controversy about how related they are, but definitely we will use the same kinds of approaches to manage myofascial pain, especially when it becomes chronic. Once a condition becomes chronic, that is, it lasts for 3 months or longer, there is likely to be some change in the central nervous system processing of pain. And so many of the same kinds of medications and non-pharmacologic treatments can apply to the myofascial pain syndrome as well.
Does that answer your question?
It sure does. Yes, thank you.
Thank you so much. Ruth is calling from Anderson. Hi, Ruth. What's your question?
Hi. Just a little bit more about the myofascial pain aspect. Once you get a trigger point or multiple trigger points and taut bands, these need to be addressed. They will cause pain, but once they're addressed, the pain will go away, and therefore that will help to interrupt the pain cycle. Could
yes.
you address that?
Yes, I think that's very true. We often utilize different kinds of physical therapy techniques in our patients who have these problems, and I agree, it can be very helpful to treat these localized areas of problem. But, again, in general, I think you have to look at each individual patient and determine what kind of treatment that person might need. And it could be a combination. So it could be localized treatment of these trigger points if you have myofascial pain syndrome. You could also consider medications if that doesn't help. So we try to utilize everything that we have available to treat these conditions.
Thanks for your call, Ruth. We appreciate it. Our phone number is 513-419-7100. We're talking about fibromyalgia this afternoon. Rebecca's calling from Finneytown. Hi, Rebecca.
Hello.
What's your question?
Um, I, I have a friend who apparently suffers from every condition known to humanity, you know, one of the, like, hypochondriac. And she has recently been diagnosed with, and I'm making the quote sign, fibromyalgia. And I'm wondering if there's been any studies into if fibromyalgia could actually be a psychosomatic condition.
Well,
I'll take it off the air.
Thank you.
Okay, Rebecca.
You know, I think there are probably people out there who still consider it a psychosomatic condition, but I can say that we no longer think that.
There was some talk about that early on. Is that correct?
Right. I think the problem is that, you know, years ago, we didn't quite understand all these different mechanisms that we now know to be involved in fibromyalgia. And much of this has come from very important work on neuroimaging, functional neuroimaging in particular, where we have actually seen with these techniques the augmentation of pain processing that goes on in the parts of the brain that are involved in pain. Here at UC, we're going to be launching a study of neuroimaging in fibromyalgia and chronic pain, where we're going to look at levels of different neurotransmitters in the brain using spectroscopy, which is another important neuroimaging research technique. And in studies to date, we can see that there are differences in levels of very important neurotransmitters in the brain, including glutamate and GABA. These are transmitters involved in pain processing. So we do see that there is a biologic change in the brain and the spinal cord of individuals with fibromyalgia. There is a change in the way that their brain is functioning, the way that they're processing pain.
So there's something physical there, but you can see it's not a psychosomatic
disorder.
Exactly. And from what your research shows. Susie is calling from Indian Hill. Hi, Susie.
Hi, how are you?
Just fine. What's your question?
Yes, my daughter has RSD, and it sounds so similar to fibromyalgia. And I was wondering if some of the treatment that they do for fibromyalgia might help an RSD patient.
So another term is complex regional pain syndrome for RSD. That's another term that's used.
Uh-huh.
And yes, there is a great deal of overlap, but there are some unique characteristics that the complex regional pain syndrome has. It's really a disorder of the sympathetic nerves. And so there are some characteristics that differ from fibromyalgia. For example, sometimes this occurs in one limb. There can be change in temperature. There's swelling, redness. So there are some other characteristics that differentiate this complex regional pain syndrome from fibromyalgia. But again, with any chronic pain condition, there can be what we call a centralization of their pain. That is, there are changes in the pain processing system that can also occur in that condition. So with fibromyalgia, it doesn't occur alone. It usually occurs with other pain conditions. So they're not mutually exclusive. So if the pain is chronic, we do try to consider some of the treatments that we have used for fibromyalgia and apply it to other pain conditions.
Thanks so much for your call, Susie. We appreciate it. Our phone number is 513-419-7100 if you have a question or a comment about fibromyalgia today. Mickey's calling now. Hi, Mickey.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
I seem to be calling every day.
Uh-oh, what's your question?
Thank you for doing what you're doing.
You're
Dr.
welcome.
Arnold, I have fibromyalgia, and I just kind of laughed at the previous caller. Excuse me, but it ain't psychosomatic. I've been a semi-invalid for about 6 years with fibromyalgia, and it is triggered by any kind of emotional, physical stress or trauma. And mine was triggered, I believe, by having had to have 4 hip replacements and having my ex-husband commit suicide and having my son in the Marines. All those things built up in my body. And after I had the revisionary surgery, I broke out into the worst fibromyalgic flare with pain, but the debilitating fatigue has not been addressed, and it just that's what's driving me down.
Is there anything that Dr. Arnold, is there anything you can do to help with that, to help her in terms of dealing with just with the fatigue itself?
Well, you are not unique. Actually, many of our patients report fatigue as the most disabling symptom of fibromyalgia. We mentioned that pain is the key hallmark symptom of fibromyalgia, but there are often associated symptoms like fatigue. fatigue, I think, is disabling because it really does seem to interfere with your function. You know, if you're fatigued, it's very hard to get up and do things. Unfortunately, it's really actually one of the most challenging things to treat. So I agree, it is a really difficult problem. What we try to do, again, is use a combination of medications, but also try to engage people in some kind of, if you will, physical rehabilitation program. And it has to begin very slowly, especially if you've been sedentary because of the pain and fatigue for so long. Your body needs to be treated gently and to start a program slowly and gradually. And oftentimes we ask for help from physical therapists who work with us to help people get started and moving and stretching, and as the other caller noted, some hands-on treatment to address some of the localized areas of discomfort. But I agree, you know, fibromyalgia, you know, can be disabling. Unfortunately, we're doing everything we can to prevent that in our individual patients, but it can be very challenging to treat.
Mickey, thank you so much for your call. We appreciate it. Catherine is calling from Pierce Township. Hi, Catherine. What's your question?
My question is there any scientific evidence that shows a relationship between rheumatoid arthritis and fibromyalgia? And the second part of my question is how successful has vitamin D therapy been with this disorder or disease? Thank you.
Two very good questions. So these conditions are not related in the sense that they have very different pathophysiology. That being said, about 25% of individuals with rheumatoid arthritis develop comorbid fibromyalgia. So many patients with rheumatoid arthritis develop pain related to the joint problems that they have. And again, when you have a painful, and we call it peripheral pain generators, some susceptible individuals, that can stimulate their pain system and change the way the pain system reacts so that patients become sensitized to pain and develop fibromyalgia, which is the chronic widespread pain beyond and in addition to the rheumatoid arthritis. So it's really important for clinicians to recognize when that has happened, because the treatment of the fibromyalgia is different than the treatment of the rheumatoid arthritis. As for the second question, vitamin D is, you know, there's been a lot of interest in vitamin D. And, you know, in our clinic, we are checking vitamin D levels and we are supplementing when the vitamin D levels are low. Does this make a difference in fibromyalgia? Well, unfortunately, the studies don't suggest that. But there's still work going on to determine, you know, what the potential role of vitamin D deficiency might be in fibromyalgia. But nonetheless, we do replace vitamin D when we do find low levels because of it's good for general health.
Catherine, thank you so much for your call. We appreciate it. Sue's calling from Bellevue. Hi, Sue.
Hi.
What's your question?
Well, my friend takes an antidepressant for fibromyalgia. Like they said, it calmed her nerves. She is tired all the time, so I don't think she realized that fatigue went with it so badly. And the serotonin levels, is there anything you can do to increase your serotonin, or does your body just manufacture it?
Right. So the antidepressants that we use for fibromyalgia do enhance serotonin neurotransmission throughout the whole nervous system. And even though it's an antidepressant, many of these actually have independent effects on pain. So there are two antidepressants that are FDA indicated for fibromyalgia. And it's important to note that you don't have to have depression to respond to their pain relieving effects, because serotonin and norepinephrine are both important for mood and pain regulation. So it's not surprising to me that she is taking an antidepressant, because there are two antidepressants FDA approved for fibromyalgia.
Thanks so much, Sue. We appreciate it.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you. Missy's calling from Wyoming. Hi, Missy.
Hi, how are you?
Just fine. What's your question?
Well, my question is, I work for a essential oil company or natural medicines called doTERRA. I have many clients who have fibromyalgia that have turned to our vitamin supplements to help them with their fibromyalgia. And they have seen a significant difference in their how they feel. Do you all know if supplements, have you seen changes in people's effects of the fibromyalgia with using supplements?
Well, I think it's a really great question, and many of my patients do try different supplements to try to improve their symptoms. And, you know, what we really need are good quality studies to determine whether supplements, specific supplements, would help our patients. We just don't have the data out there.
Are there more studies going on?
Not to my knowledge. It's, you know, challenging to do studies. We need research monies and support. Of course, at UC, we're very interested in improving the treatment of chronic pain. And are actively involved in trying to increase studies in this area.
Thank you so much, Missy. We appreciate it. Mary's calling from Anderson. And Mary, we have about 20 seconds. What's your question?
Dr. Arnold, I was in maybe three of your studies, and I need to find out if I can find out if I was on a placebo or on the regular, you know, medicine.
10 seconds. How would she find out?
Well, thank you for helping us. We really need help from people with fibromyalgia in our studies. And why don't you call us, and I will let you know.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
We've been talking about fibromyalgia with Director of the Women's Health Research Program and Professor at the University of Cincinnati Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Neuroscience, Dr. Leslie Arnold. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier. Today's technical director was Bruce Ellis. Archives of our program are available on our website, wvxu.org. I'm Marianne Zalesnik.